All right, so you know how we're always trying to crack open those black box AI models and figure out what's really going on in there? Well, today's deep dive is going to take us right into the thick of it. We're diving deep into the work of data scientist Marcus Loescher. And let me tell you, this guy's research, it's shedding light on some hidden bias and in a way I hadn't even honestly even considered before.
Yeah, you know what's really interesting about Loescher's work to me is that he's kind of tackling this problem that often flies under the radar. It's the bias that's baked into the explanations that machine learning models give us. We get so fixated on whether the model's predictions, are they accurate? Are they working? We rarely take a step back and question, well, are the explanations themselves trustworthy?
It's like blindly following your GPS without realizing it's using maps from like 10 years ago.
Right.
You might eventually get to your destination, but that route could be full of unnecessary detours, you know?
Exactly. And that's where Loescher's research on SHA values comes in.
Okay.
So these SHAP values, they're meant to give us that explanation, that why behind a model's decision.
Okay.
Like, why did this AI approve this loan application? Or why was this patient flagged as, high risk? But Loescher's research is saying, hold on a second. These explanations, they can be misleading.
Okay, I think we need to back up a bit here for those of us who haven't exactly spent our days, buried in AI research papers. What exactly are SHAP values?
So imagine you're trying to predict the price of a used car. You've got all these factors to consider. You've got the make and model, the year, the mileage. SHAP values are like a breakdown of how much each of those factors influence that final price. So it might tell you that, hey, the high mileage, that was a big factor in lowering the price. But on the other hand, the fact that it's a really popular model, well, that actually bumped up the price a little bit.
Okay, so it's like getting a sneak peek under the hood to see what's driving those AI decisions.
Right.
But you said these explanations can be biased, so how so?
Yeah, so what Loescher found is that SHAP values tend to favor features with lots of different categories. Think of it this way. Imagine you're trying to predict someone's favorite food. A feature like cuisine preference, that can be anything from Italian to Mexican to Japanese. That's high entropy, meaning it's got a ton of possibilities. But something like spicy food, that's only got two real options, yes or no, lower entropy.
Okay, so using our car example from before, a SHAP value might say the car's color is super important in determining the price because there are so many different colors out there.
Exactly.
When in reality, it might not matter as much as something like, I don't know, the engine size.
Exactly. That's a really simplified way to put it, but you've hit the nail on the head. What Loescher's finding is that SHAP values can be, I guess, fooled in a way by these high entropy features, making them seem more important than they actually are.
And remember, we're not talking about just the prediction itself. This is about the explanation, like the logic behind how the AI got there.
Exactly. And this is where I think Loescher's background is really interesting. It comes into play here because this isn't just some academic working away in a vacuum. This is someone who holds eight, count them, eight patents. That's got to mean something in the real world, right?
Absolutely, it does.
And in fact, one of his patents is directly related to this research on SHAP values. He's not just identifying the problem, he's actively working on solutions.
Okay, please tell me he's found a way to actually fix these biased
He
explanations.
has. And surprisingly simple, actually. Elegant, you might even say. He uses a technique called sample splitting.
Sample splitting. Okay, that sounds a little intimidatingly technical.
It's actually pretty intuitive when you break it down. Imagine you're baking a cake. You wouldn't just throw all the ingredients in a bowl and hope for the best, would you?
I mean, I might, depending on how confident I'm feeling, but yeah, I see your point.
Well, in data science, you really got to test your models before unleashing them on the world.
Right.
That's where sample splitting comes in. You're essentially dividing your data into two groups.
Okay.
One to train your model, that's like your initial cake test, and another separate group to actually test it on. Think of it like, your friend taking that first bite.
Okay, so it's like a built-in quality control check for those AI
I
explanations.
need it.
You're essentially seeing if those SHAP values hold up when you hit them with some fresh, unseen data.
Precisely. And by comparing the SHAP values from that training and testing phase, Loescher can identify and even shrink the bias. And that leads to, you guessed it, more reliable explanations.
Okay, so instead of us blindly trusting our GPS, it's like Loescher is giving us a map and a compass so we can actually double check the route ourselves.
I like that.
But how does this actually play out in a real-world scenario.
Well, Locher uses a really compelling example to illustrate this, the Titanic data set.
Wait, the Titanic? As in the unsinkable ship Titanic?
The one and only.
Okay, you've officially piqued my interest. Let's talk about how the Titanic factors into all of this after a quick break. Okay, so we're back, and we're talking about the Titanic, SKHAP values, and this whole wild world of machine learning. This is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, so imagine you've got this machine learning model, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're using it to analyze all that Titanic passenger data, seeing if it can predict, you know, who survived that tragic night and who didn't, based on things like their age, what class ticket they had, whether they were traveling alone or with family, all those factors.
Right, kind of like those could you survive the Titanic quizzes you see online, but with, you know, some actual hardcore data science behind it.
Exactly. So let's say the model spits out a SHAP value, telling you that a passenger's cabin number, like the actual number on their door, that played a major role in their chances of survival. Now, on the surface, that might sound plausible. Maybe certain cabin sections were closer to lifeboats when the disaster struck.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
But if you dig a little deeper with Locher's debiasing technique, you might find that those cabin number explanations, they're actually pretty skewed.
Because cabin numbers, they have tons of variations, right? Mm-hmm. Making them a high entropy feature, just like we were talking about before the break.
You got it. And that's what makes this Titanic dataset so great for explaining this. We have the benefit of hindsight. We know something like a person's cabin number shouldn't really have a huge impact on their chances of survival, even if the algorithm tries to tell us otherwise.
It's like this stark reminder that just because an AI can crunch numbers and find correlations doesn't mean it truly gets the context, you know?
Absolutely.
And that feels especially important when you think about things like loan applications, where an algorithm might fixate on these seemingly small factors and use those to make unfair decisions.
That's exactly it. It really highlights the critical importance of Locher's work in this whole bigger picture of ethical AI. Because by getting rid of that bias in the explanations, we're not just making these models more accurate, we're making them more fair, more transparent, and ultimately more trustworthy.
Because if you can't even trust the explanations an AI is giving you, then how can you trust the decisions it's making, right?
Right. It's like that old saying, garbage in, garbage out.
Hmm.
If your explanations are flawed, then the decisions based on those explanations, well, they're probably going to be flawed too.
Okay, so we've established that getting rid of this bias in these AI explanations is important. But Locher's research, it doesn't stop there, does it? He hints at this really interesting link between his debiasing technique and this whole problem of overfitting in machine learning models.
Right.
And I have to admit, whenever I hear overfitting, my brain just pictures someone trying to squeeze into a pair of jeans that are like two sizes too small.
I love that analogy. And it's not that far off, actually.
But it's not, right.
Overfitting is when a model basically gets too fixated on the specific data that it was trained on. Like, it's memorized all the answers to a practice test, but doesn't actually understand the material. So when it encounters new data, new situations in the real world, it's going to bomb.
So back to those too tight jeans, it might look like they fit perfectly in the dressing room mirror, but when you get out in the real world, not so much. And I imagine in the world of AI, where these models are making bigger and bigger decisions all the time, overfitting is not a good look.
Absolutely not. And that's what I think is so clever about Locher's approach here.
Okay.
He's essentially suggesting that we use those SHAP value discrepancies. Remember, the differences we see between the training phase and the testing phase. He's saying we can use those as a kind of early warning system for overfitting.
So like if a SHA value for a certain feature is wildly different between the training data and the testing data, that could be a red flag that the model's putting way too much importance on that feature.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And catching those overfitting red flags early on, that is crucial. Think about it. If a model is overfit, you might not even realize it until it's already out in the wild making inaccurate or even harmful predictions.
That's like only realizing your jeans don't fit when you're already running super late for a really important meeting. Not ideal.
Not at all.
But by using this debiasing technique, you could potentially spot those issues early on and adjust the model before it's too late.
Yeah, it's like having a tailor on standby to let out the seams before you leave the house.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we see the real genius of Locher's work here. He's not just tweaking algorithms. He's really fundamentally changing how we think about these machine learning models and the explanations behind them.
So it's about more than just getting the right answers. It's about understanding why those answers even matter in the first place.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And I think this leads us perfectly into, well, the broader implications of all of this, don't you think?
Right, because it's not just about the technical stuff, the nuts and bolts of AI. There's a much, much bigger picture here.
Absolutely. Lucher's work, it really forces us to confront some big, even philosophical questions about, well, about our relationship with data.
Like, how much can we really trust these insights that we're getting from all these algorithms?
Exactly.
And we'll be right back to discuss all of this and more.
We're back. And you know what? I feel like this is where things get kind of deep. You could say that. Because at its heart, Lucher's work, it really makes us grapple with this fundamental question. In a world that's relying more and more on data, how much can we actually trust these algorithms we're building?
Because it's like we've stepped into this whole new era, right? Where algorithms are helping us make these weighty decisions about everything from whether or not you get that loan to, like you said, even medical diagnoses. But if those algorithms are built on data that's, you know, got some bias baked in, or those explanations are flawed from the get-go, are we really making any progress?
It's such a crucial point. We tend to think about algorithms like they're totally objective and unbiased.
Right.
But the truth is, they're only as good as the data we feed into them. And a lot of times that data, well, it reflects our own human biases, our blind spots, even if we don't realize it.
Yeah, it's like that classic saying, garbage in, garbage out, right?
Exactly.
If we're not super careful, we risk creating these AI systems that actually make existing inequalities even worse.
Absolutely. And I think that's exactly why Lucher's work is so groundbreaking. He's not just trying to make these AI models more accurate, which is important, don't get me wrong. But he's trying to make them more transparent, more trustworthy, so that we can actually understand the why behind those predictions.
So, like, what does all of this mean for, you know, the everyday person, the non-data scientist? Should we be approaching every algorithm-driven decision in our lives with a healthy dose of skepticism?
Yeah. Well, I'm always a fan of healthy skepticism, but I think it's more about being informed, being engaged. Don't just blindly accept what an algorithm spits out as the absolute truth. It's on us to dig a little deeper, to ask the right questions, understand the limitations of these models, and, you know, just think about the potential consequences of their decisions.
Yeah, it's really like anything else. Blind trust without a little critical thinking can sometimes lead you down some pretty strange paths.
Right.
We need to be aware of both the amazing possibilities of AI and those potential pitfalls.
I totally agree.
Wow, this deep dive has been honestly eye-opening.
It has.
Lucher's work is like shining a spotlight on this whole hidden corner of the AI world, a place most of us don't even realize exists.
I think you're right. It's definitely given me a lot to think about.
Me too. And a huge thank you to you, our amazing listeners, for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating world of AI, bias, and the quest for trustworthy explanations. Until next time, stay curious, keep asking those tough questions, and don't be afraid to challenge those algorithms.